All right, I think that's it. So let's go ahead and get started. My name is Keith Laborde. I'm a principal service engineer in our Office 365 division for customer experience. And with me, I have Philippe Morin.
Yeah, I'm Philippe Morin. I'm a senior service engineer with the customer experience team with the Office 365 deployment team.
Great. So thanks for spending some time with us in the last session, in the last room, all the way at the end of the hall. So I know that everyone here really wants to learn about deploying Office 365. So it's great you're here, and also I know that we're the only thing standing between you and refreshments that we have in the office booth at 6 or 6:15. We're scheduled to go to 6:15, but we'll try to get out a little bit earlier. So I know that that's where we want to go, and please make sure that you stop by the booth after this session here. Before I get started, let me kind of get a show of hands. How many folks have deployed Office 365 and are familiar with it? Have gone through the steps and everything? Okay, that's good. Others thinking about it? How many folks are kind of have it on their roadmap and plans to get there? Very good. So what we'll do is we'll try to address some of the things that you've experienced so far with deployment, and then hopefully answer any questions that that you may have on your mind as you're thinking about preparing and kind of moving towards that. Go ahead and let's advance the slides here. So those that have done traditional on-prem deployments or through your Office 365 deployment, we typically thought of a traditional deployment methodology as really, you know, key steps which here are in the middle, kind of around plan, prepare, and migrate. You can see it took quite a bit of time because as you're going through that planning and remediation and preparing, you really weren't able to experience the service, you know, between 10, 12, 14 weeks or whatever that was. What I want to talk to you about this afternoon is really a process and an approach that we call fast track. And what we've simply done is kind of reorder the steps to get you to the service and to allow you to experience the service much faster, get users on there, allow you to kind of take full advantage of the capabilities of the service rather than having to do all of this planning up front. So I won't go into much detail here, but clearly an on-prem deployment is quite different from a cloud deployment, and what we'll talk about this afternoon is deploying to the cloud. So there's a couple of key areas here. If you remember the kind of the plan, prepare, migrate that we just showed you on the previous slide, what we've done now is put in place an approach called Fast Track. And if you go to office.fasttrack.com, you'll see where we have kind of the three key steps. And what we do is call that, you know, really the pilot phase, the deploy phase, and the enhance phase. And I'll go into these in a little bit of detail and kind of tell you what's behind those. Then we'll run some demos. Philippe will kind of walk through each of these to show you from the user experience what you're going to get out of working through each of those. But really, it's across all of the workloads, so Exchange, SharePoint, Link, Office Pro Plus, and Windows Azure Active Directory. Again, the key here is really being able to experience the full capabilities of the service early on. So I'll talk about, you know, being able to deploy in hours and weeks versus kind of months that we used to see with the traditional approach. We'll kind of get through all of the you know, the real world benefits where you can actually get users in production using the service with things that are not throwaway, where you'll have to kind of start over. You know, you used to think of things as a proof of concept where you had to kind of stand up the environment, you'd bring a few users on, you'd let them go and you'd test it out. Now what we want to do is let all of that carry forward from the pilot phase where you're not having to throw away anything and really restart. And then we'll touch briefly on kind of the enhanced phase. We call that step three. That's really adding some of the other enhanced features like ADFS, hybrid, and some of these other type of things to really give you the full feature value that can meet your needs from that side. Let's go to the next one here. So this is how we've really broken down the technical approach to this. And really, again, the key is, you know, first use in hours. So really going in, setting up your pilot, setting up your tenant, adding users to that, really able to kind of experience the full service within hours. And as I mentioned earlier, we want that to persist all the way through deploy. What we don't want to do is, you know, because you're in a cloud environment now, we don't want to have to tear anything down and restart. What you're having to do is move users two and three and four times by doing that. What we want to do is make it simple and easy for the end user where they can persist to deployment and they can kind of take this on their own terms. They can do a user-led deployment. So what they're going to get out of that, as I mentioned earlier, they'll get the full workloads. It's not as if they're only going to get parts of the service, or they'll only be able to try a few type of things. They're really going to get the full experience, including kind of the mobile devices and all the Office web apps that they can experience. How are we going to do that? What we'll do is we'll kind of set up a service domain. So it'll be the onmicrosoft.com for those that are familiar with kind of the cloud identities and where that is. We'll start with the web clients, so no need to put any clients on the devices or workstations at this point. You'll get the full Office client, and then the intent here is really self-service. So you can start, again, within hours, start to feel what the service is like, start to kind of pull in connected accounts, which we'll talk about here and some of the other things. So that's really step one, meant to be done in hours. And then after you've finished your pilot and the pilot is complete, what we want to do is we want to move that into step two. So you can kind of see the three simple steps here: pilot, deploy, and enhance. And deploy is really about the core onboarding. So here's where you're really thinking about bringing on a number of folks to the service. It could still be your early adopters. It may be 20, 25 within your companies that you're looking to bring on to Office 365. But like it, where the pilot was in hours, what we're looking to do here is really deploy in days. So again, we're not talking about weeks or months and kind of dragging this out into a long-term project. It's really about getting there to really, you can set up the tenant and get your instance running for really company-wide cloud use. We're talking about really production mail, where you're able to kind of do this through connected accounts, and you're not seeing kind of what test mail would look like on the server, but you actually have connected to your on-prem mailbox, and now you're able to kind of see where that is. We do that through shared namespace, simple coexistence, so you'll get to see the GAL, you'll get external sites and so forth with SharePoint and others, and kind of how we do that, it's really around an IT-led migration, so it may be staged, and we're going to go into a lot of these in much more detail, so I'm just kind of glossing over the top here to kind of give you a backdrop of what some of these things are. And step two is where we introduce DirSync, so directory synchronization. That's where we're going to start syncing the on-premise directory. We have a tool that's in place now called IDFix, which is not only going to help you identify what some of those errors are that you may be able to remediate, but it's also going to help you fix some of those. That's one of the biggest pain points that we heard from folks like you in terms of how do I get prepared to get to the cloud. So we'll also introduce some of those tools and give you a demo on what we've done there. Password sync, relatively new feature that we just released a couple of weeks ago. So it's actually embedded within DirSync, and it's a simple checkbox. If you want to not stand up an ADFS instance for same sign-on, you can now do that with password sync, and we'll show you that it's a simple checkbox and how that works through. Admin migrations we'll talk about, and then OnRamp is another kind of tool that we have which allows you to go through checks to kind of walk through port checks, domain checks, a lot of the other things that you want to make sure that you're ready for the cloud. Step three is really about the enhance phase. This is where you have the optional integration. So if you want to get into a hybrid setup where you have a few users in the cloud, you have some in your on-prem environment, you want them to be able to coexist, this is where those phases come into. So it's really kind of a customized landscape around federation. I mentioned the hybrid. We won't touch much on here, but if you have questions after this, we're happy to kind of dig into that a little bit. And we just froze here. Let's see.
Did it? Oh, gosh. Let me start back again.
There we go. All right. So in summary, and then we'll start some of the benefits here, or some of the demos. With the benefits, it's really, as I mentioned before, what we're trying to do is not throw anything away. You don't want to spend, kind of even hours where you have to go back and redo that work. So what we've done is kind of moved all of this into a real production pilot where you're actually experiencing the full use of the service. Minimal on-prem requirements. So most of what I've talked about in step one and step two can certainly be done within the cloud, and you're not having to do any real changes to your on-prem environment or anything along those lines. Time to value versus effort invested. We want to make sure that you can start using the service immediately versus having to spin up different resources, projects, and so forth to move things forward. There's multiple ways to kind of migrate data to the cloud. So if you're looking to start with a new, clean, empty mailbox, you can certainly do that. There's PSTs. You could do self-service. There's also IT managed through Stage. And again, we'll touch on all of those. Then you've got a couple of identity options. You can stay with the cloud ID, but if you want to use your shared namespace, we'll move into synchronized IDs. with DuraSync, and then certainly federated IDs as part of step three. So let me stop there with kind of the backdrop. I'll turn it over to Philippe, and he can start to work through or walk through some of the demos and a little bit more detail around step two.
Okay. If my slide deck is working. So as Keith mentioned, the Fast Track program is about three steps approach, where we start with a pilot, and we will briefly talk about what the pilot is. Roughly, it's using the Office 365 trial capabilities and leveraging the trial capabilities to provide end user with a full set of services. Then we will jump to deploy step, and we will drive you through implementing shared namespace, implementing the directory synchronization, checking the Active Directory on-premises elements, and help you fixing the errors prior to introduce DSync. So going to that pilot phase, if it's working with me, it doesn't seem to be working. Oh, gosh, I wish I had this working. Sorry about that. Here we are. No, that's not that one. So starting with a pilot, as Keith mentioned, we want to provide the user during that pilot phase with all the feature set, including Exchange, Link, and SharePoint, but also including the Office Pro Plus subscription as part of the service, and let them consume the service side by side with their existing environment. The idea is to limit as much as possible the infrastructure change onto the on-premises environment, but let the end user consuming the service not only with empty mailbox, but probably with data that they could pull off the on-premises environment. So as a demo of what the environment and the pilot could be, we will just start with showing you what the Fast Track program side is providing you as instruction, and jump to what an end user client perspective consumption of the service is. So let me jump to the Fast Track website. So starting from that website, so from fasttrack.office.com, you got all the instruction on how to. Where's my scroll bar? I'm doing everything wrong there. Let me resize that. Oh, gosh. The screen size is not working. I do apologize for that. Can I scroll there? Why is it I don't have the proper resolution? Sorry about that. So from that one site, IT people can get all the instruction to lead with the pilot, start the end user with that pilot. You got some instruction on how to build the trial, what the consideration you need to take when starting the pilot. For example, you have to consider which naming you're going to be using, as we will bring forward all the configuration set, and we will move from pilot to production all the configuration elements. For example, as you can see here, the naming that we will be using as a tenant when creating the trial will be bringed over for SharePoint consumption, will be used for link default namespace, and will be carrying on when going to production. So this is the key decision factor you need to have when building that trial. But when this is complete, you're going to have a complete set of enterprise or academic tenant, and following the instruction, you will be able to pilot the domain using the onmicrosoft.com default client identity and start building the configuration for a set of user. So if we think of a company, say Contoso 104, which will be our testing company, that company just signed for a trial. They are starting a new pilot, and their IT admin has been provisioning a couple of users for the pilot use. So from an end user perspective, the result of that configuration, say I'm a user signed to the on-premises environment with my desktop computer, I'm just connecting to my Outlook client, so connecting the Outlook client to the on-premises environment. We provide, as part of the Fast Track site, some templates for communication purpose, where the IT admin could start teasing the user and provide some early information on what they're going to be bringing to the user. Later on, when they've been creating the tenant and provisioning the user, the next set of configuration could be some reminders, normal user reminders. So the next set of communication would be the IT admin providing a URL to connect to the service, identity to use to connect to the service. So in that case, we are using the onmicrosoft.com, which is the default naming for that tenant. We are not bringing over yet the on-premises domain. This is going to be next step. This is going to be deploy step two. And we will see how to build that shared namespace in the next steps. But as with this small set of instruction, the end user could easily connect to the service, provide their identity with the information that was bringed by the IT admin, connecting to a... And Philippe doesn't type properly, does he? Let's say it's working. So this is the default end user portal all the user that will be consuming the pilot will be landing onto with set of instruction on how to use the service, but also ability to consume Exchange Online, consume SharePoint Online and SkyDrive Pro, and include the presence within the web client, and eventually deploy the Office Pro Plus client from this download page. But let's start with the Exchange Online connection. And as I mentioned, this will be the very first time the user will touch that Exchange Online configuration. So as any new provisioning, let's say we are in Madrid, I'll keep the English because my Spanish won't do me any good. As an end user, they will be provisioned with empty mailbox. If we just look at what the instructions were from the communication perspective, you will see that the IT admin is providing information on how to connect to the on-premises environment using connected account. Just some roundtable. Has anyone be using the connected account? Are you aware of connected account? Who knows the connected account capabilities? So connected account capabilities, in short, is the ability to pull the email using either IMAP 4 or POP 3 to any messaging system that expose IMAP 4 or POP 3. Granted that it only covers the email item, but that provides a good set of data down to normally empty mailbox, and we can have mailbox sitting side by side using that capabilities. So back to the Exchange Online mailbox, following what the instruction were provided through that set of connected account, the user would go to the option, would create a new connected account configuration, which is just a matter of connecting the Exchange Online mailbox to the on-premises environment. So from that on, the user, preventing some typos, the user is just connecting to the Exchange on-premises environment using published IMAP endpoint. What you're seeing on the web UI is the cloud connection, the cloud rendering. What we've been providing is the credential to connect to the on-premises environment using the IMAP connection. So demos shows that at the end of that configuration, we got a proper connected account setting working. And in the background, the Exchange Online infrastructure will pull the data from on-premises down to the online mailboxes. There seems to be a question there. Question is, can we sync in bulk the on-premises infrastructure? We will briefly touch base just after that demonstration what the capabilities are at that stage, and on every stage we will show you with the workflow and the options for the migration. Just to answer a bit that question, the connected account is a self-service approach where only the end user are capable in putting the settings and configuring the connection directly to the on-premises. We don't provide IT-led capabilities and bulk configuration of connected account. This is in the thinking, but we don't have something set in stone yet. So this is completely end-user driven, completely self-service. This is the reason why IT admin has to push communication down to the end user. The target is a small subset of user. We're not talking about thousands of users pulling all the data and doing the manual lifting for pulling the data. But this is a good start for the pilot. And we will see what the options are. But for company that don't want to expose IMAP or for company that don't want to go provide instructions to end user, we got other options. We got PST export, or further on the road, we got other migration capabilities. But as a starter, that's good enough for most of the company we've been engaged with. So as of now, we got a connected account. Well, as I speak, it even downloaded the content while I was speaking. So back to the Outlook folder, we just see that we're just reflecting what was on premises. Every hour, the mail will be pulled off the IMAP connection, and every mail sent to the on-premises environment will be pulled on a regular basis down to the connected account configuration. So the idea is really to get this side-by-side configuration. It's also enabling the possibility to send as the user. So when sending as the contoso104.com user, you will be sending as if you were the on-premises user. When we will get a bit further with shared namespace, the shared SMTP domain will enhance that end-user experience. So just going back to the slide, if I didn't miss anything. Yep. So next will be PowerPoint doesn't do me any good.
And everything we've pulled up here, it shows demo, but this is actually the live service which we're on right now.
Yeah.
So you can certainly go and try this. You can, as I mentioned earlier, you can sign up for a 30-day trial. You can add yourself. You can kind of choose a domain name and start to play around with it from that side. You can walk through all of this and work to set up connected accounts with your on-prem environment. Yes.
Correct.
Is it possible to change the URL for the SharePoint site
before
you sign up for
the
demo, or is it set when you?
It's set when you choose your name. Yeah, I'm sorry. The question is it possible to change your SharePoint URL once you set up the service? It's not possible at this point. We are looking at roadmap features that will allow you to do that. So essentially, with Exchange, it's not an issue because you'll bring your vanity domains, and that won't be exposed. But for SharePoint, it is, and there is plans in the work to make sure that, or to be able to change that going forward. It's not something that's there today. Yes.
Can you add an additional name?
Can we add an additional name? This is just something we're going to show in a few minutes. So you're a bit ahead of the discussion there. So at that stage, we didn't do much thing. Apart from getting the IMAP connection to work at the premises, and from a cloud perspective, we just create a brand new tenant. We provisioned a bunch of users, and I didn't show you. I'll show you later on what the tenant configuration is like, but we got something like 10 user provision within the tenant as part of a trial. So at that stage, we are only using a cloud identity. So users are signing against Windows Azure Active Directory, the Office 365 directory you consume the service from. And from a migration perspective, the green path is what we've been showing. So it's a self-service migration where the data is just pulled through the connected account. We still have other migration options at that stage. We are still able to attach PSTs to Outlook configuration. We are able to inject PST to the service, either from a self-service perspective or from an IT admin perspective. The IT admin perspective would be, for example, using the PST capture tool that the Exchange team is bringing to the picture. And from an IT-driven perspective, we could also get some IMAP cutover migration from the service perspective. So pull all the user using IMAP if the service is something different than Exchange, because you may want to use different tactics with Exchange to preserve calendars and contacts and so on and so forth. So next, jumping at the next step, which is the deploy phase, we are introducing what we call the shared namespace. Shared namespace being able to use the identity of the user as if they were using their on-premises identity. At that stage, we are not even talking about this thing. We are just talking about unifying the identity. So let's say I'm logging as my @contoso104.com domain for that sample, or if I was connecting as my Microsoft account when Microsoft is in the loop. From an email perspective, it's the matter of providing shared global address list, so the idea of being able to mimic all the email-related objects from the on-premises down to the service. So we got a copy of the global address list in both sides. And it's the matter of implementing simple mail flow between the two environments. So being able to spread this shared SMTP namespace across the two environments, the on-premises environment and the cloud environment. From a migration perspective, on that step two capability, depending on the source environment, we got various options, and we are depending on what the source environment is. If we're talking Exchange 2010 or 2013, we will be driving hybrid configuration, 2010 hybrid or 2013 hybrid, depending on the source. If we were to run 2007 or 2003, at that stage, without additional component deployment, we could be running stage exchange migration or just get new mailbox activation and start with net new mailbox. And from the other environment, it could be either PST export or IMAP migration or net new mailboxes. What do I mean with stage exchange migration? The stage mail migration is the stage exchange migration, which is an Office 365 Exchange Online native capabilities the service is providing for migrating 2003 and 2007 Exchange server down to the service using Outlook Anywhere endpoint. So this is a native capability the service is providing. So out of the Office 365 box.
And typically, if you have 1,000 users or less, staged is the approach that you take because it's the native capability.
Yeah, we just leverage what Exchange Online is providing as a migration capabilities. From a collaboration perspective, we can start expanding the link connection with business partners. We could start expanding the SharePoint usage with site governance and introducing SharePoint site provisioning. And we will start deploying Office Pro Plus client down to the desktop and laptop. From a mobile user perspective, it's expanding the Windows Phone and the ActiveSync capabilities from the service. Just now, looking at how shared namespace will be implemented into the service. It's just a matter of finding the right. Right. So there, I need to resize my. Where is that? Sorry about that. Let me do. It's tricky. So from the portal perspective, it's the matter of registering the domain into the service. So we got the Office 365 portal with that Contoso 104 tenant. From the admin perspective, we've been provisioning a couple of users, and the user I've been playing with is Ted Mido. As of now, this user is only using the cloud mailbox connected with the on-premises mailbox, using the Contoso 104 cloud.onmicrosoft.com identity. What we want to bring now into the service is that shared namespace. So we want to register contoso104.com, which is the vanity domain of the company, with the service. So what we need to do is first start registering that domain through a couple of steps within the service. So just get contoso104.com domain register. Next will be to prove the ownership of that domain. So we will be getting some DNS instruction we need to consider. And you see here, for example, in order to prove that we own that domain, we need to create a domain, a TXC record or an MX record into the DNS zone. So I'll be doing that into the domain to complete that session, that section. So I'll be using just the box that is connected with the DNS. What is it? That's that box. So I'll be just using that one box, which is once again not sized appropriately. Let me do that. So I'm just using a local tool to manipulate my DNS. Normally, it takes a few minutes to get to the DNS propagation, so I'll give the checking a try, but maybe I will have to jump back and forth into the discussion to get that configuration validated. So if going back to that one guy, assuming we've been doing the domain record registration and everything has flown through the internet, demagogues are with me a bit. So we just managed to prove the ownership of the domain. So now at that stage, we got the domain being part of the tenant. So if I skip past all the other steps and just go to that domain, you see that this domain is now showing as part of the configuration. I just need to do one additional change in the Exchange Online to configure Exchange Online not to be completely authoritative with that domain. So as we are sharing the namespace between the two environments, we just want to make sure Exchange Online is aware that it doesn't own all the user for that given domain. So if I go to Exchange Online and the accepted domain, the newly created domain need to be configured as being an internal relay so that when cloud user will be sending email to non-migrated user, they won't get any non-delivery report back because of the configuration being only authoritative. Setting that domain to internet relay enable the sharing of the domain between the two environments. Later on, this will be enhanced when introducing the unified global address list between the two environments. But at that stage, we need that configuration to be in place. The next thing in the loop is to apply this domain as the new identity for the pilot user. So prior to that step, the user are using this on Microsoft identity. So now that the domain is available, in order to ease the use of the service, we just want to get the user with their own identity, just their login identity. So what we do at that stage, we go back to the user, and we change their identity, their main identity, from the on Microsoft to the contoso.com identity. So as we can do that in bulk, I'm not willing to change the identity of the user. I will be just editing all the users that are part of the pilot. Just telling for that set of users that we want to apply a new domain.
Yes, go ahead.
And
There's a question related to desync and identity. We will go to that discussion just in a couple of minutes when I will be introducing desync. But to start answering that question, we have been provisioning user from the beginning into the pilot, and they are net new user. What we want to proceed with, to sustain with the configuration, is that eventually when we introduce desync, we are matching the identity. In order to get that matching, we need to go through that step. So we need to prepare the identity to match what we'll be bringing over from the desync component. So we are just preparing ourselves for the next step of mastering the directory information from the on-premises environment, from the Active Directory environment. So we need to have that matching prepared ahead of the configuration so that we don't create duplicate accounts. This is only for the test user. We will see there's something like 50 user on my on-premises environment. As soon as desync will be desync configuration will be complete, you will see all the directory information populated by what the directory the directory synchronization box is bringing over. At that stage, we've just implemented shared namespace. We didn't change much. What we did is we introduced a new namespace. We allow the user to use their on-premises identity. We're not even talking about the password. We're just talking about the identity. And we just enabled that configuration. We didn't change the password for the user. They will remain the same. A new communication may be needed to the end user so that you'll tell the user that their new sign-in identity will be their email address, let's say, and that will do the trick. So,
did that address the question on how to add domains? I think up front might have asked it earlier. If not, let us know.
So, at that stage, we still have cloud identity, so we're not even using the on-premises password. These are the password that were provisioned initially by the IT admin when creating the user, and maybe that has been changed by the end user at the first connection. So we just introduced the shared namespace. From the migration perspective, we got two scenarios, one being with Exchange 2003 and 2007, where we are still capable of doing self-service PST import-export, which is just a matter of the end user using their Outlook and dragging and dropping the email and calendars and contacts into their cloud mailbox. And we also have the IT-driven capabilities, PST import, export, and IMAP migration. From a 2010 and 2013 perspective, we got almost the same capabilities, IT-driven. We didn't really bring the PST capabilities, but they are part of the capability at that stage. Next set of operation is to prepare the directory and prepare the directory to get the synchronization between the AD on-premises and the Office 365. So just prepare the environment for desync. So making sure we are able to bring the unified global address list between the two environments. So in order to help us in doing so, the AD on-premises may be in various stage of of their configuration. There are some set of rules that apply to the on-premises environment in order to get the object synchronized. There's a set of characters that are not allowed. There are a set of attributes that must be provisioned. There are a set of rules that need to be complying with the configuration. In the past, we were just doing some queries against the directory, and the remediation of the AD situation was usually a bit tricky. In the past months, we've been publishing a new tool to help the IT admin to query their AD and check against the main rule we know are generating errors when going through desync. So this tool is called IDFix. It just connect to the AD forest. It's just based off the errors we usually get from the desync team, and we are checking against those rules. We are providing, suggesting change when we are able to provide this change, and the tool is showing a grid of errors where you can edit the values, apply the change to the Active Directory. You are able to roll back if the change you made are not correct, and you can go on and on with the configuration change. So just skipping the...
As he brings that up, so this is a tool that was developed by my team internally. We've put it out there on TechNet and getting quite a few downloads on it and some great response. Keeping with the whole theme of fast track and helping you kind of onboard much faster, we're also working on a network analysis tool that you would be able to click. It's similar to some of the speed tests that you've seen, but it will not only incorporate speed tests, it'll also do port checks. It'll make sure that the firewall is compliant and work through that. So we're trying to introduce more and more tools into the service that you don't have to go and do a lot of this troubleshooting on your own to figure out what some of the things you need to do to prepare to get there.
So just introduction to this IDFix tool. I'm connected to the on-premises environment. I just installed the tool on a member server of the forest. It's the Exchange box, but it could be any member servers with the proper prerequisites, some .NET framework component deployed. So starting with the tool, well, you got the warning telling you what the tool is going to do against that directory, and that the change will be saved into LD5, and you could roll back the change if needed. So the tool will present itself as a grid. The tool will be able to query the directory. Any authenticated user in a forest is just able to query the directory. The change will really depend on what the permissions this account is granted. So I'm connected as an administrator, so I will be able to commit the change to the directory. But if you are not an administrator, the tool is able to generate an LD file, and you will be able to provide that file to an AD admin. So the AD I'm querying against has a couple of errors. The usual suspects we usually see, there's some invalid characters, the question marks, the at sign, the plus sign are values that are not valid into the display name for the synchronization purpose. So the proposal the tool is making are within those three columns. There's other errors in the formatting which are related to the user principal name. In some AD deployment, The user principal namespace the customer has been using is not a publicly routable domain name, and we need that domain to be registered into the service, so we need that domain to be publicly routable. So all the locals, all the dodgy namespace are not valid domain names for UPN. As you see there, we don't know exactly what to propose, but we provide some editing capabilities. So what I could do there is just change all the values to something valid. Let's do the .com change for all the users. I need to fix all that before introducing the desync. So hopefully there's only 6 users at that time. So next, I would apply all the suggested change, so all the updates there. Let me edit one.
You do have the ability to multi-select here, and some of the things that we're doing in the V2 release is some UI updates as well. We received a lot of great input from folks like yourself on additional filters that we should be checking for. So
yeah, that's a V1 coming. Yep. Version of the tool. So at that stage, we just update the attributes that were not complying with the rules and just making sure everything is completely clear. So going through another set of query doesn't return any errors. So at that stage, the AD is up and ready to be synchronized with desync. So next step. So next step is really to implement desync and then just going through that synchronization with the on-premises environment. So we've been mastering manually or in bulk using PowerShell scripting or CSV import all the user. At that stage, what we want to do is to source the directory element from AD on-premises and connect that AD on-premises with Office 365 so that we got all the directory provisioned to the cloud, but we also maintain a shared global address list between the two environments. So let me jump to the...
One question? Yep.
Yes.
If you have a hybrid environment between the company, Exchange and Office 365, can I avoid the Office 365 users to see the addresses in the on-prem Exchange?
So you want to segment... I'm sorry. Is the question, can you segment the GAL so the on-prem users cannot see the Office 365 users in the cloud?
Yeah, or vice versa.
Or vice versa.
So the question is, you want to avoid the on-premises user to see the online user and vice versa from a GAL perspective?
Yeah.
And you're doing hybrid, so you mandate this thing to be in place?
Yeah.
There are... in Exchange Online, ways to implement address book policies and address book views. So technically speaking, this is something available. This is additional work to go through, but technically speaking, you can do that.
Did that come with the new version of Office
365? That comes with the new version of Office 365, correct. And I'm taking the question and then I'll proceed with the demo.
I'd just like to add to that. You can filter what organization you need to synchronize with your SIG, and that way you can exclude organization units that you don't want to be shown.
I assume this is not a question.
No, it's a...
So, yeah. And I got a slide just after that about that capabilities. This gentleman was saying that we could filter out the object we are synchronizing to the cloud. And this is one option also. So what we are doing now is to connect the on-premises directory with Office 365. I went through the pain of deploying DSync into a member server, so I save you some cycles. So at that stage, the DSync application, which is considered as an appliance software, is deployed on the member server of the forest. And next, we will go through the configuration of that DSync component. And this is going to be a simple wizard way there. So I've pre-input some value, so I refrain from doing a bunch of typos there. But the wizard is going through six steps, asking you first the Office 365 tenant admin credential. It will connect to the tenant and checking that the configuration for that given tenant is capable for the DSync purpose. Small command there in Office 365, and I will show you that in the portal when coming back to the portal. You have to activate the tenant for a directory synchronization. This can take up to 72 hours from what the service is saying. So when you provision the tenant and when you plan on doing DSync, the first thing you want to do is to activate that DSync capabilities. If you don't do that, you're going to get a nasty error at the first step when trying to connect to the tenant, and you will have to wait for a couple of hours to get the provision to flow. Question? Previous step, this was the tenant admin, the global tenant admin. Next step will be at that stage, we need an enterprise admin account for the very first configuration. The reason why we need that enterprise account is because we are going to create a service account in the forest to which we will be granting search capabilities and attribute change capabilities in every domains of the forest. So the very first time we run the DSync, it's mainly read of attributes. It's only write back of attributes when we do exchange hybrid. So most of the time is mainly read permission we're granting to that service account. But the very first configuration, we're creating an account and we're delegating the permission, the proper permission set to that account. In the DSync documentation, there are instructions on how to mimic the permission. I would really recommend against that. I would really get an enterprise admin to flow through the wizard the first time, get the proper delegation between the team, and then proceed with the setting. You could easily miss the configuration and get DSync to be really dodgy at that stage. So this is the set of domain admin accounts we are providing. So this is going to be creating the proper service account and the proper delegation. Question is, what protocol are we using to transfer the data to the cloud? So DSync is connecting through a web service call to an administrative endpoint through TCP 443 and doing SOAP calls over the HTTP communication. This is outbound-only communication from the premises to the cloud to a given set of endpoint, and we are only floating data out. So all the calls are against a web service interface that the Windows Azure Active Directory service is providing. So we're just consuming Windows Azure Active Directory data there, and endpoint. It's TCP 443, so HTTPS connection. Yeah, there's an SSL tunnel in between. It is. That stage, we will skip past because it only makes sense when 2010 or 2013 hybrid configuration exchange is in place. The next step is the new portion Keith was referring. There's a whole session on password sync I would refer you to. But the nice thing is the desync appliance is able to flow a mimic of the password to the cloud. So we are flowing a hash of the house to the cloud, so that when users are signing to the service, they will be able to use the identity because of the shared namespace we just implemented, but they will be also able, with that checkbox ticked, and I'm going to be ticking that one, with that checkbox ticked, they will be able to use the same password as the on-premises password, and the password will flow over the change. So every time the user is changing his password or her password, the change will flow to the service. Question? That's a good question. If the user is changing the password in the cloud, he will be with no lock, because he will be getting his password valid for a given set of time. But as soon as the user will be changing the password on premises, this will be overwritten. When the password sync is in place, the password on premises take precedence over the cloud password, and get eventually changed when the password is changing on premises. We are not able to force that flow easily. We can kick a full password synchronization for the whole directory. We don't have, for the moment, granularity on flowing extra password sync, but we do initial full sync of the password, and as the user are changing their password, we're flowing the change to the service, and the change takes something like a couple of minutes. So the idea is to ease the use of the service, to reduce the help desk call, to provide identity option without mandating the full-blown federated identity capabilities. So this is something that helps us a lot in the fast-track approach, where we want to have less and less change on the premises side, but provide rich capabilities from an IT and user perspective. So if I complete that configuration change, this is the very first thing. So the desync appliance will not only flow all the directory objects, but when all the directory objects will be provisioned in the service, we will kick a password synchronization full cycle after that, so that we get all the service applied. So it should take a couple of minutes to proceed. So. Yep. Let me jump back to where we are at that stage. So at that stage, and I got two workflows, one for Exchange 2003 and 7, and one for 2010, 2013. So at that stage, we've been introducing shared namespace. We've been implementing desync, and we've also leveraged the password sync capabilities. So identity are identical or are shadowed. From a migration perspective, if we're talking about 2010 or 2003 and 2007, the migration capabilities are mainly IT driven. So at that stage, desync being in place, we are able to leverage the Exchange stage migration. Exchange stage migration being the capability from the service to pull all mail contact calendar and all the mailbox content using the Outlook Anywhere endpoint from Exchange on premises, and move the data and move the user in stage in group of migration batches. At that stage, if the environment is a 2010 or a 2013, We still have the shared namespace. We still have the desync in place. The migration options are PST export from a self-service perspective. It's also driving to the hybrid configuration for that exchange admin perspective. Given that the hybrid configuration would need the hybrid configuration wizard to be running against the exchange on-premises and the exchange online environment, but this is a set of operation that usually don't require additional hardware on the premises environment. If the source environment is a 2010 or a 2013, it's the matter of exposing the right endpoint and the right component to the internet and getting the hybrid configuration with it to run and complete. So if we just have a look, and maybe the demo will complete successfully on that. We will see. If I go back to the portal, which I left with the shared namespace, we got the DSync appliance running in the background. And you may be able to see that you now have more user than we had initially. So there's some extra user that are showing. But we also have this user who was there initially. Arlen Huff, I remember her name. Arlen was one of the pilot user. Because we've been changing the identity just before doing the desync, desync matches the two identity, and now not only the cloud user is available with a mailbox into the service, but the directory information have been matching with the AD on-premises, and all the information are now mastered in the premises environment and flowing to the cloud. So at that stage,
question. Hold on.
Yeah, question is, if the user before desync introduction was with two passwords, which one will take precedence? If we tick the box flow password, so do the password sync, the on-premises is the source of authority, so it will overwrite the end user, the cloud password by the one in coming from the premises, and the premises is always taking precedence over the cloud password. As soon as you tick the sync my password option, all the passwords change will flow over the desync component. So I was just willing to show you the list of unlicensed user. These are the users that were just provisioned that don't have any valid Exchange Online or SharePoint Online or Enterprise E3 licenses. So these are mainly the users that just flow through the desync, and you can proceed with activating the user and later on migrating those users over.
We had DirSync already loaded here, but we do have guidance out there if you need to go and set up your instance and what's required.
Yeah.
It'll walk you through step by step on how to do that.
Yeah. So just a quick summary of what step two is bringing as a deployment option. It just transitioned the pilot into production use. It also enhanced the service with on-premises identity, introduce password capabilities, and just prepare the environment for the next steps. Next step being velocity migration, mass migration of user, and mass use of the service. I will just some quick jump onto enabler. As one gentleman was mentioning, We provide with these things some filtering, some scoping capabilities for enterprise that don't want to get all their on-premises AD directory to be provisioned into the cloud. We allow some OU-based or domain-based scoping, so you can filter out some of the user. The result is the user won't be available into the service, so they won't be getting any mailbox or cloud capabilities. The next set of enablement, you've seen that. We just introduced the password sync. It's less than a month old, so this is brand new features there. Now, going a bit further and expanding on the past, and really the idea is to start with a pilot and proceed with the tenant and expand on the capabilities. As of now, we never roll back. We never throw anything away. Everything was sustaining while we were proceeding with the deployment. So at that stage, we got a lot of enhancement capabilities. That includes ability to do federated identity, so being able to authenticate against your AD, leveraging the Active Directory Federation services and integrate this ADFS with the Windows Azure Active Directory. It enables the Exchange Hybrid configuration, so being able to do enhanced collaboration capabilities, doing online move from on-premises to Office 365, and that enable also some SharePoint enhancements, including the business connectivity services and some other advanced capabilities. So two typical enhancements we are seeing in step three. One being the introducing the federated identity. So at the stage we got desync in place, we are able to introduce federated identity from a migration perspective. That doesn't change the picture. We still enable the self-service, so PST import export. And depending on the source environment, it's going to be stage exchange migration or hybrid migration. The other typical step three enhancement is to leverage the Exchange 2010 or Exchange 2013 hybrid configuration, where you build that server starting from 2007 or 2003, and you deploy 2010 hybrid environment, or if it's a 2007, you can also bring a 2013 hybrid configuration. You run through the hybrid configuration, and you're enabling the rich collaboration between on-premises and cloud user, and you could move user. You can onboard user to the cloud, or you could offboard user back to the premises if needed. So all right. That's roughly set.
So, yep.
I didn't get the whole question. When you got hybrid configuration in place, what's the mail flow picture like? The mail flow picture like is either or. So you could still point your MX, your main entry points for a given domains to on-premises as if it was at the beginning and the hybrid, the hub transport server or the mailbox server will flow the mail over back to the services. Or you could leverage Exchange Online Protection and point your MX records to the cloud and get that hybrid configuration to flow back to the premises. Both could work. It really depends on how you feel with that configuration, what the configuration you want to apply, and you could move the records while you're doing the project.
Go ahead.
The question is about EOP licenses, the Exchange Online Protection licenses. My understanding is you have to license all the users that you're protecting with EOP. So out of the box, the Office 365 licenses are providing that EOP license. But if you say, like, for example, you got 2,000 users in the cloud, but 10,000 users to protect, you will have to license those remaining 8,000 users. With additional EOP. And I wasn't expecting to be short on time, but I'm
We still have a few more minutes, but let's go ahead and wrap up here. I think this is primarily the last slide. As I started at the beginning of the session, I promised you alcohol and refreshments after this, so please go by the booth, and we'll be there just as soon as we can, and we can answer any further questions and things that may come up. So hopefully this was informative. Hopefully it allows you to at least get your thinking going, and please hit the site fasttrack.office.com. And again, thanks for the time today.
Thank you.